Okie dokie, let's talk health this morning on this Monday morning. And Peter Clark from healthyyou.com.au joins us, or is it .net.au, Pete?
It's both.
It's both.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thanks, Michael. Great to see you again.
Now, we thought we'd do the bit of myth-busting, the 10 facts or fictional.
There's a lot of stuff out there on nutrition, and something is folklore, and some of it's based on science, and some of it's not. So we thought we'd just spend a few minutes talking about what I've come up with is 10 myths and realities, and see if we can come up with the truth.
I'm going to try and see if I can guess them. I'm going to be the contestant.
He's going to be the contestant.
Okay, right. Number one, Pete.
Low-fat milk has less calcium than full cream milk. So this is something that I get asked a lot. A lot of times people tell me that they think it has. Other people think that it's exactly the same. So what do you reckon?
I think that's false.
Low-fat milk does have exactly the same amount of calcium as full cream milk. So you are correct. You are correct when you say that that is false. So certainly milks come in all different forms, and in fact there's that advertisement on television that highlights the fact that there are so many different types of milks. But generally speaking, milk is should be a standard part of our diet. The guidelines these days are saying that low-fat milk should be what we should be aiming for anyone over the age of two. If you look at the calcium content in milks, they're all exactly the same with most of the major brands. They're the same in protein content. They're the same in calcium content. They're generally the same in sugar content. Where they do vary is in fat. So
Okay. If
you decide that you want to drink low-fat milk and you're worried about the risk of osteoporosis, nothing to worry about. It's all pretty much of a muchness.
Excellent.
So one out of one. That's
one out of one so far. Number two, Pete.
In a half a medium-sized avocado, there's 23 grams of fat. Now, is that true or is that false?
Thumbs up or thumbs down? I think it's true.
23 grams of fat in avocado is true. Congratulations. Two from two. A dietitian in training here. Avocado is very high in fat. But the fats that are in avocados are good fats. So they're the fats that are good for the heart. They're called monounsaturated fats. They stop the bad fats being absorbed into your diet. And certainly avocado, if you choose to eat it, is a healthy fat to add into your diet. You've got to be a little bit careful of how much you eat. Because it is high in fat, I try to limit people to about a quarter of an avocado a day. But certainly avocado can form a part of a healthy diet. So that's a good one. 23 grams of fat, but good fat.
100% so far. Number 100%. Three, Pete.
Okay, the next one is a very tricky one, and this one I think the thoughts on have changed over the years. But the true or false, Michael, eggs are bad for your heart.
I think that's false.
Three from three. And he didn't even get these answers. He's
doing
it from the top of his head. He's very good. Now, the reason that people think that eggs can be bad for the heart is that they are very rich in cholesterol. And in a standard egg, there's about 210 milligrams of cholesterol. But the thing that increases your blood cholesterol, which is the thing that puts your heart at risk, is not so much the cholesterol that's in food. It's more the saturated fat. So, you know, if you were to have eggs with bacon, the bacon is more dangerous to your heart than the eggs.
So that's where I'm going wrong.
Yeah. So eggs we've got to be aware of. They do contain cholesterol. If you have more than six a week, it starts to put you at risk, but most people don't do that.
It's the old story, everything in moderation.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's like a few of the things we've talked about over a long time now. It's getting that right balance. But certainly eggs, if you choose to eat them, excellent source of protein, great source of a whole variety of minerals, and they should be good for you if you've got heart problems and if you don't.
I was also thinking that we had talked in the past, not so long ago, about having two eggs in the morning sort of really gives you a kick along mid-afternoon. I thought, well, if they're bad for you, they probably wouldn't tell us to do that.
That's right. Well, some of the studies in what you're talking about there are some of the studies that have shown that if you eat eggs for breakfast, then the hunger hormones later in the day are a lot lower. And so people tend to not have that mid-afternoon hunger pang if they're eating eggs. So, eggs, excellent source of protein, should be a part of your diet six a week.
Okay, so let's go to the other end of the day, number four.
Number four. Now, this is a tricky one. I know what answer you'll want to give here, but what answer should you give? The question is, people who drink alcohol live longer, true or false?
In moderation, I'm going to say true.
4 from 4. Amazing.
I'm doing something wrong.
That's impressive.
I know all the information. Why aren't I following it in real life?
It's putting it into practice. That's a trick, isn't it? Well, it is true. And your qualifier was exactly right. It's how much you choose to drink. So the studies, there was a study that came out in 2007 that looked at the longevity of people who drank certain amounts of alcohol. And they used as a baseline people who didn't drink. And then they looked at the longevity of people that drank 1 to 2 drinks a day, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, and so on. And they found it's almost like a J-shaped curve, which is if you say that you don't drink is zero, then your risk of having health problems and dying early is actually slightly lower than that if you drink 1 to 2 standard drinks 5 days a week. Mm. So about 6 or 7 drinks a week is about the right thing. Standard drink's an important thing. So a standard drink is 375 mils of a mid-strength beer, 100 mils of wine, or 30 mils of a spirit. So you've got to be careful on how much you
have. Yes, because you might have a wine glass, could be 150
mils. That's right.
And you have two of them.
Often people get a lot more than the 7.5 standard drinks in a standard bottle of wine. And so you've got to be careful on how much you drink. But certainly 1 to 2 standard drinks 5 days a week. Though people who do that tend to live a little bit longer, and that there's a lot of studies from that whole Mediterranean region where we talked about the Mediterranean diet before, where a little bit of red wine or a little bit of alcohol with a good balanced diet is the best recipe for success long term.
Excellent. Let's go to number 5.
Number 5, microwaving foods zaps the nutrients and reduces the quality of the food. Is that true or false?
I'm going to say false. Excellent. Wow. I haven't looked at the answers either.
No, and he hasn't.
I'm just thinking, I haven't heard that, so...
I think certainly microwaving is something that's easy, it's convenient for all of us, and it's a regular thing. Most households these days have a microwave, and so there's a lot of research being done on the safety of microwaves, and generally speaking, I think the thing that causes or reduces the nutrient components of foods when you cook them is how long they're cooked for and at what temperature. So if things are cooked for a long period of times at high temperature, it can take a number of nutrients, particularly the water-soluble vitamins out of your diet. So things like vitamin C and thiamine get reduced if things are cooked for a long period of time under high heats. And obviously because microwaves cook for short periods of time, it is a different type of heat, but for short periods of time, it has minimal impact.
So if you've overcooked them so they're really soft, does that remove?
It can remove particularly the water-soluble vitamins, so vitamin C. And so if you do cook things for long periods of time under high heat, then I'd be making sure that I'd be eating oranges and mandarins as my fruit. Vitamin B group vitamins can be sustained from other food groups as well. So, but generally speaking, I think if you're microwaving foods, you won't have that problem because it's only cooking for a very short period of time.
Okay, now if 50% is a pass, then I've passed.
Well, he's already there.
But
well, let's see if he can get
I probably have to go more than 50%. So number 6,
Some
Pete.
Of these next ones are going to be a little bit tricky. And this is one that is a little bit controversial. So... there's a lot of children these days who've been diagnosed with autism, and I see a number of those come into my practice, and mum and dad often ask me about, is a gluten-free diet useful in these types of conditions, and will it help? Because there's a lot of people who believe that it is. So, Michael, is a gluten-free diet helpful in autism?
I'm going to say false.
6 from 6.
I mean, I think you're making them too easy.
I must be. I'm going to have to do some research on some
either
of these
that, or we've talked for longer.
Maybe we've talked about some of these things before, but certainly yes. Yeah. So look, I know when children have autism, parents will be desperate to try a range of things, and there is a school of thought out there. And if you read Dr. Google will tell you that there's some evidence that suggests that a gluten-free, casein-free diet is effective at controlling some of the symptoms. There was a study that was published in May from one of the American universities, Rochester, that had a look at a double-blind study. So they blinded the participants and the researchers, and they did a crossover looking at preschoolers with autism, and they found there was absolutely no evidence to suggest that that a gluten-free diet had any real effect. Now, as we see with a lot of medical research, studies only talk about the averages, so there may be some people that do respond slightly better in these types of things, but on average, the chances are that it's ineffective. If you're going to consider something like that with your child, then what I'd say is do it in conjunction with a healthcare professional, or your doctor and your dietitian, to make sure that you're not sub-optimizing their overall intake. But certainly, it's one of those things that I wouldn't hold out a lot of hope being successful. But you know, in some people,
there might be some correlation, but could be individual to individual.
That's right. That's right. So, but if you're going to do it under supervision.
Yep. Yep. Okay.
Okay.
And that's number six. Number seven.
Number
Pete.
Seven. Diet soft drinks do not cause obesity.
Oh, that's got to
that
be
true.
That's got to
that
be false.
That
hasn't
is
it?
False. Very good. Yeah, look, diet soft drinks have a whole lot less calories and a whole lot less sugars. And if you choose to drink soft drink, then I would prefer you to drink diet soft drinks. But the studies are saying that those who regularly drink diet soft drink go on to develop obesity. They do it at a slightly slower rate than those who drink full sugar soft drinks, but they still go on to develop obesity. And the reason is that what diet soft drinks do is they contain fructose, and we've talked a little bit about that in the past. Fructose is a sugar that stimulates the desire for other sweet foods in your diet.
So, really?
So you may not get the calories from the soft drink, but from the biscuit or the cake that you might have in conjunction with it. That's what causes the problem.
You've been conned by the manufacturer, aren't you? They're trying to work
That halo effect of saying, well, this won't cause this problem. Well, au contraire, Pooh Bear, it's a different problem, but it's the same outcome.
Look, I know I've put on a lot of weight, but calling me Pooh Bear.
Not quite like that.
Okay,
so seven from seven.
Oh, that's pretty good. So number eight.
He's on the way to a perfect round here. So this is a tricky one. A cappuccino made with full cream milk takes about 45 minutes to walk off. Now, it does depend on the size, but I'd say on average, a 250ml cup in a coffee shop, 45-minute walk, true or false, at 5 kilometres an hour.
I'm going to say true.
True it is.
Oh, it is. Wow. Excellent. Because I sort of thought it might not be true, but I thought I'd go for it anyhow.
Well, look, this is an interesting one because I think a lot of the times people talk to me about they grab a coffee on the way to work if they're looking at their health and they're looking at their weight. And so we talk about the type of coffee and we look at the calories in the coffee. And in the average cappuccino that's made in coffee shops and certainly some of the chain coffee shops, they've got at least around 750 to 800 kilojoules. Some of the larger sizes will have well over 1,000 kilojoules in them. In fact, one of the chain restaurants here in Port Macquarie who sells a chai latte, a tall chai latte, their lattes have 2,380 kilojoules just in the drink. And that's without the donut or the biscuit that you may have with it.
And this doesn't take into account the sugar you might put in?
No, that's right. That's right. That's just the calories from the milk. So an hour's walking burns off about 1,100 kilojoules. If you're having a cappuccino, just a medium-sized one, 800 kilojoules, it's about a 45-minute walk. But if it's the bigger size or the chai lattes or the mochas, you'd be looking at well over an hour walk to just walk off the calories of the drink itself without the sugar. As you say, if you add the sugar in, it's worse. And then if you have the free donut that might come with it, then it can even be worse. So be careful of the calories that are in liquids.
I thought of a 45-minute walk at 5 k's an hour, which is sort of, a pleasant clip.
Yeah, an average pace.
Would probably have the same effect as having a full-fat cappuccino.
Well, that's the thing. That's they virtually cancel each other out. And a lot of times I see a lot of cyclists who spend a lot of time on the bike and then they'll have a coffee together. And the coffee is great for helping overcome fatigue. But if it's a milk coffee, you've got to be a little bit careful of the calories that are in it.
I had a gym, when I joined a gym in Sydney, the guy said, look, we don't mind what gets you in. You've got to get yourself out the door with the bag. So even if you have a coffee to make yourself feel more motivated, that's fine. It gets you through the door.
And I think it depends on the type of coffee.
Yeah, of course it does. Okay. That's number eight. So number nine.
Number nine. Now, this is another controversial one. The cholesterol margarines lower your cholesterol. So I see a lot of people referred to me, their cholesterol's up, and they're using the cholesterol margarines. Are they really effective, or is it a bit of a marketing?
Because I'm a cynic, Pete, I'm going to say that is false. Yes.
Wow.
I'm right to be a cynic.
9 from 9. Amazing. Well, look.
But honestly, when something says it lowers something or raises something, I just think, how?
I'm going to qualify this now.
Okay.
So what these products do is they contain a component called plant sterols. And if you have enough plant sterols, then you can lower your cholesterol. So if you have about 2 grams of plant sterols every day, it lowers your cholesterol by about 10%. So they can have an impact. However, most people don't have 2 grams of plant sterols a day. If they have the margarine, they generally spread it quite thinly. If you spread it quite thinly, you're probably getting between half and 0.8 of a gram. So you're not getting your 2 grams per day. So they will have minimal impact. What they'll do is if you do dose them up enough that you'll get the 2 grams, then that's a lot of calories you're adding to your diet. And I find with a lot of people, if they have enough that they lower their cholesterol, they'll find that they gain weight because they're eating too much margarine.
I was just going not to forget the bread that you're putting the margarine on.
That's right. It's what you have with it. So if you had a diet that contained different sources of plant sterol, maybe the margarine, maybe the milk, maybe the cheese, you might be able to get there. But I think there's more effective ways than those to lower your cholesterol, using some high-fiber cereals or high-fiber additions, things like psyllium and things like that are probably a more effective way to do it.
Okay, now.
So 9 from 9, Michael. This is so
intriguing. The pressure. I'm feeling the pressure.
Here we go for the perfect round. Too much fruit in the diet can lead to diabetes. True or false?
False.
Bum, bum.
Oh, no.
Close, but no cigar.
Really?
Unfortunately, fruit's one of those things that is good for us. It's an excellent source of energy, a whole variety of vitamins and minerals. It's easy to carry and convenient. But too much fruit can be too much sugar, and too much sugar, regardless of how it's delivered, is going to lead to diabetes.
It's majorly full of sugar, isn't it?
So that's
I can
right.
feel when I have it here in the morning, a hit that you get.
That's right. Mm. So, and that's one of the benefits of fruit, but if you have a lot of it. So everything in moderation. For most people, 2 pieces of fruit a day is about the guideline. Now, if you're eating 4 or 5 pieces of fruit a day and there's a family history of diabetes, then you're probably putting yourself at greater risk. So all these things are in moderation. So 2 pieces of fruit a day for most people, I think, you know, with a balanced diet, I think your risk of diabetes is not raised.
Okay.
At
all. So, Pete, 9 out of 10, would you call that a
pass? Well, I think that's an excellent pass. That's trainee dietitian material. Excellent result.
So 10, you know, subjects for discussion, I suppose. There must be a lot more myths than this.
Well,
too,
I think if
there?
People have got any myths that they want us to clarify, feel free to contact us through either the ABC or our Facebook site. Anything you want clarified, we'd be happy to address those next month. We can chat about those then.
Yeah, that would be good. So you could go through the ABC Mid-North Coast Facebook site or address it to Michael, or you could go directly to
Healthier You Dietetics, Port Macquarie, on our Facebook site. And either of those two ways, just send us a question. Our contact details for email are on our website as well, healthieryou.com.au. And if you want to contact us or contact the ABC, then we'd be more than happy to answer any questions you've got next time.
10 myths busted.
There you go. 9 out of 10. Very impressive.
Thank you, Pete.
All right.
Until next time. Oh, by the way, before you go, next week, you're going to be in Boston at a conference.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. We're heading off later this week for a meeting. It's the largest dietetic meeting in the world. So it's the American Dietetic Association. 10,000 of the 90,000 dietitians in the world will be together.
Wow.
All in one place.
You're going to have to sort of monitor your heartbeat, aren't you? It's going to be so exciting.
In pig's heaven, it'll be great. But what we thought we'd do is just do a live cross maybe one day, and we're going to work out the logistics of what day that might be. But just with some of the conference highlights, some of the things that are being discussed from where it's being discussed over there in Boston.
That would be fantastic. We'll and also week. You're lodging your entry for the Boston Marathon?
Not quite this year. So okay, maybe it's sometime in the future.
Thanks, Pete.
Terrific, Michael. Thanks. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.